was actually the residents of the island that started the campaign to have the name of Russell Island changed back to the traditional name, which was Kanaipa. And there was a process undertaken by the state government. I think it came down to an online poll, which unfortunately was just in favour of not changing the name. So it was quite a shock, obviously, to the traditional owners. We thought it would be, you know, obviously going to be reverted to the traditional name, but unfortunately it wasn't. So for that particular area of Quandamooka country, whilst we'll still be calling it Kanaipa and putting it on all our maps that it's Kanaipa, will stay officially on the state government records as Russell Island. However, we are also pushing for the name change to North Stradbroke Island to be called Minjerribah as well. So we have native title rights over Minjerribah. So we've been on a campaign to have that change as well, just like Ayers Rock was changed back to its traditional name of Uluru. And I've been doing the rounds with a number of media outlets about that, and that's caught a lot of interest as well. Moving to the post-mining era, to an eco-cultural tourism era, it just makes sense to have the traditional name. And a lot of island names in this area are traditional names. So Coochie Mudlow is Karagara. They're all connected by a dreaming story. So it's kind of like, why wouldn't we just have them all the same, you know, have their traditional names so that the dreaming stories are alive and well? Something we'll keep advocating for until it happens.
It's interesting because when I spoke to you last time, you explained to me the dreaming track of the islands there. And for anyone who knows that part of country, you know, it is such a special, sacred area. To learn from you about, you know, and the Quandamooka people about the area makes it even more important.
Yeah, and part of the Quandamooka Festival is about retracing those dreaming tracks, reconnecting with those islands and celebrating those dreaming stories with the broader community of those residents of those islands as well, which has been really good. So we'll keep doing that, and then I think it'll be a matter of when, really, I think, is when the time is right. The broader community will make their decision to come back to what's right and what's just.
Okay, so we're going into the Quandamooka Festival. Can you talk about the cultural history of the festival, please?
Yeah, look, like most Aboriginal people, we've always celebrated and had kunjils, which is our word for crobbery. And so we've always kind of had those gatherings, and we've also traditionally gone to like the Bunya Festival up at the Bunya Mountains and that sort of stuff as well. So for us, it came to, after Native Title was awarded and recognised in 2011, there was basically an opportunity and I guess a groundswell to, on the back of that Native Title rights, to start expressing ourselves more. And that came through, you know, not only land rights, but also through language and the arts and cultural expression. So it had been a 20-year desire of some of our elders to get a festival started. I just gathered all of our community organisations together and said, why don't we do it? They all agreed. So last year was the inaugural Quandamooka Festival, and it ran over 3 months from July to September. And that was because, you know, you don't get many festivals that run for 3 months, but that's because the geographic area of Quandamooka country is quite large, and we wanted to really celebrate across the geographic area so that we could reconnect with those spaces and traditional places as well. So that was the genesis of it, and we're in our second year. This year, there's been great support from both Redland City Council and Brisbane City Council, which are the two local authorities that we deal with, and also just local businesses and the community as well. So it's been really exciting, and the state government's looked at, you know, awarding some funding for the next few years for it. So that's really good. Gives us a foundation to go out there and keep doing it. So basically go out there and express ourselves culturally and in the arts, and then for the broader community to celebrate that as well. Just been an amazing response from the local community, and yeah, people want more and they're just excited by it.
I mean, obviously you're celebrating culture and family connections to country there. I mean, I know at times on Minjerribah there's been a lot of issues with tourism and the overpopulation of people coming onto country for party reasons and schoolies and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you're talking also, I mean, this is a festival, but you're also talking about the ecotourism. And how do you think you can kind of change it with what's happening on Minjerribah with the level of tourism and people that are actually coming onto the island so that you can keep places protected?
Yeah, look, there's a few approaches to it, and the festival is one of those key approaches. So the festival is about celebrating country, culture and people. And ingrained within the festival program, a lot of it's about environmental protection. And for example, this year, one of the key issues about people feeding dolphins and catching dolphins on lines and stuff like that. So we've got Bulka Boolangan is an event this year, which is calling of the dolphins, which is a traditional hunting method that we used. And so putting events like that in to draw attention to how to culturally and environmentally, you know, interact with dolphins is some of those things. And we have environmental trips out on boats and people, you know, reef check, and we have all these different types of organisations that people are, you know, I walked down the jetty and there was this massive boat filled with people and they're all going out on an environmental tour as part of the Cornamooka Festival. So it's about identifying to people the importance and the significance of the environment and just how unique the environment is for Minjeriba, and people are responding to that. In the broader sense, with the closure of mining, the state government's looked at an economic transition process, and part of that process is to look at tourism, promoting tourism, but also underpinning that is cultural heritage as well. So we're the cultural heritage body, so we're looking at any of those sort of areas, how we protect those sites, interpretive signage, and managing the cultural heritage in an appropriate manner. So any tour operators now, generally because of native title, have to come through us to access national parks and access other areas of the island which have native title on it. So we kind of provide that layer of protection and preservation for our cultural heritage, which is really important.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay and I'm speaking with Cameron Costello, CEO of the Quandamooka Yullabarrabi Aboriginal Corporation. We've been talking about some of the issues that the Quandamooka people have endured, trying to rename one of their islands off Minjeriba, North Stradbroke Island, in the Quandamooka Bay. The people of Quandamooka are also planning for eco-cultural tourism after the resolve of the sand mining on the island. This will happen in 2019. So can you give us a bit of a history of the mining? I mean, I grew up in Brisbane, across the water there on the mainland, and it was a really big time and grievance for the community with the mining. Can you give us a brief history of that?
Yeah, look, mining started in, I think it was late 40s, early 50s over here on the island, and it's been kind of a double-edged sword. So there was, you know, protest because Midden sacred sites and stuff were mined, essentially. And back those days, there was no Cultural Heritage Act or anything like that. It was just Aniudjuru Noonuckle was a key protester as well during that time. But on the other hand, too, it also then, there was a benevolent asylum that used to employ all of our mob. And when that was closed down, the mines were the only other real alternative. So we had families that worked in the mines as well. So it's been, since that time, it's been a double-edged sword, you know, with most of our community, I would say, were not employed in the mines because of the cultural reasons, but then there was others that were employed in the mines, and I'm pretty sure there's not one family that hasn't been employed in the mines over here. And, you know, but we knew it was ideally if we could get employment without having to use the mines, that would be the way to go. So, you know, I think whilst we acknowledge that people now have to find other jobs and stuff, the overwhelming majority of the Quandamooka people voted for mining. Back in 2011, we said we'll give you 8 years to transition from mining, but enough's enough. Enough sites have been destroyed, enough profits been made from our land. And I guess it's a culmination of a lot of things, like where we are located on the doorstep of a capital city. You know, we've had pretty much the guts mined out of our island, and they extract water from our island to the mainland. And then, you know, the bay waters, because we're sea country people, you know, there's just so much fishing and commercial fishing and taking of our natural resources that, you know, we're just, enough's enough, you know. So whilst we acknowledge that mining, you know, did play its part in employing our people, we're happy to move on and look at eco-cultural tourism and other sustainable industries, you know, aquaculture and forestry, that sort of stuff as well. So utilising the land and sea for more sustainable purposes that were more akin to what our, you know, traditional ways of sustainable living on the land were. So it's a pretty exciting future for us. The state government's announced over $20 million for economic transition package. And so we'll have a whale watching permit. We're going to be building a cultural centre. You know, we're going to have an Indigenous Business Development Fund to start our own businesses on the island. Yeah, we're looking forward to a whole range of those different employment opportunities. And it's good because it's creating our own businesses. We'll be owning those businesses. And we all know that Aboriginal businesses are the best ones to employ Aboriginal people. So we're looking forward to that.
So with the actual site where the sand mine is, what will happen regarding the rehabilitation of that area?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because part of the native title was basically the return of lands, and at the time there was no firm decision on how we would use those lands. So we've been on a 4-year land planning process where we've had experts come in and look at what's the maximum best use for each parcel of land returned to the Quandamooka people for economic, social, cultural, environmental purposes. So it's possible that some of those sites that have been mined might be the better sites for us to develop ecotourism infrastructure. So instead of going to a pristine area and putting a resort there, you might look at those places that have already occurred. Each mining lease has to come back up to an environmental authority, the conditions of that environmental authority. So unless the Quandamooka people want to use that piece of land for another purpose, then the mining company has an obligation to return it to the conditions under the environmental authority.
Mm-hmm. Poor old country, hey?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of ceremony about healing and all that, you know, stuff with Mother Earth. It's going to be a process that we're going to have to undertake. And we're already doing that now as we analyse what the damage of colonisation towards the management of our island. Another big factor is just the fire management regime that we had traditionally has been gone for, you know, 60, almost 100 years now, and experts are saying it'll take us 100 years to get it back to what we wanted to do, you know, how we traditionally manage for fire, because fire is so important to us and so important to the landscape and how we managed it, that under the mining era, we've had wildfires over here because it hasn't been managed correctly, the fire management. So we're now on a process of going back and looking at how we can manage fire and protect, identifying what sites, cultural sites, not only cultural sites, but environments. You know, some of the 1,000-year-old trees over here, you know, they're the remnants of our way of managing the ecosystem. So we're now identifying those and making them a priority to protect as well, so that we can try and restore that ecosystem over, you know, the next 100 years. We're inheriting damaged country. It's our duty and our obligation as the custodians of the land and sea to now go out and restore it and heal it. It'll be generational, and that's what we're going to have to do. But that's our duty and our obligation as Quandamooka people, is to care for Mother Earth. So we're up to the task.